The next case is 04-1923, Gregory Bakies et al. And Jim Properties versus City of Perrysburg. Justice Lansinger has obviously recused herself from this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Lansinger, Judge Lisa Sadler, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 10th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Sadler.
Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Todd Zimmerman. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay,
I represent the appellants, Greg and Karen Bakies, and Richard Smith in this case. And very briefly, the case involves one in which the issue that brings us here today is whether or not the Bakies and Mr. Smith can be compelled to agree to annexation out of Perrysburg Township into the city of Perrysburg to enjoy continued water service that they have for a number of years. And to more specifically address that, the Bakies moved into the township in Willow Bend, their subdivision, in 1998, and have enjoyed the city of Perrysburg water since that time. And Mr. Smith has lived in the Willow Bend subdivision since 1978. Mr. Smith's case is a little bit different from the Bakies in that he was never required to sign any agreement. He was never required to essentially do anything other than to receive water early on from the city of Perrysburg, and has continued to do that in exchange for his payment of his water bill every month. Now, at the lower court,
Council, you agree, do you not, that we could decide this on two separate principles? We could decide whether Mr. Bakey could be required to agree to annex when he has no other alternative of getting water, or we could decide on the Smith case that they signed a contract, the contract trumps, these other issues fall by the wayside. We could decide them on two separate principles, could we not?
Your Honor, I believe you could decide them. I think Mr. Smith was the one who didn't sign the contract.
I'm sorry. We'll flip them
then. But I would agree that they could be decided on two separate principles.
And we could decide that Mr. Bakey signed a contract, he's bound by the contract, he can't change his mind, et cetera, but then look at the different legal issues involving Mr. Smith, could we not?
You could. And that would be a distinction that's drawn between having conceivably a written contract that you're bound by and having, whether it be termed an oral agreement or an unwritten contract. And I think that was the distinction that the City of Xenia versus Central State University brought up when it enforced a late fee on Central State University for both water and sewer services. And essentially, they were two different because there was a written agreement for the water service. There was not a written agreement for the sewer service. And so the Court of Appeals held that where there wasn't a written agreement that imposed a 10% fee, but instead there was an unwritten agreement to provide sewer services, that it couldn't then later be changed.
Mr. Zimmerman, are you arguing that was a contract of adhesion that Mr. Bakey signed?
I'm not arguing that that is a contract of adhesion, and I don't think that that argument was in the briefs. At least it wasn't at the appellate court levels. So to answer your question, no, we're not.
Counsel, to get back to the Xenia case that you just cited, aren't the facts here easily distinguishable from those facts?
I don't know that they necessarily are distinguishable. The difference, I guess, could be perceived that in the City of Xenia case, the late fee was essentially for something that had already passed, and that the attempted change in the present case is for water service in the future. But again, even if you got to that point and you agreed that there could be a change in the future, there would at least need to be reasonable notice, which would create an issue of fact that the trial court should decide. The appellate court, in addressing the city of Xenia case and saying, to the extent that it doesn't agree with what we've held, we disagree with it, then said that there could be a change in the contract between Mr. Smith and the city of Perrysburg unilaterally upon reasonable notice. And then it went on to hold that because of some changes in the city ordinances, there had been reasonable notice, I believe since 1988, but there were several changes in the ordinances, all of which the city water rules said, you will agree to annexation if you want to continue water from the city of Perrysburg. As a private extraterritorial water customer, it's our position that Mr. Smith is not bound by a constructive notice of what the city of Perrysburg's ordinances are. If he was a city of Perrysburg resident, he would certainly be expected to know and abide by the ordinances as they were in effect. But essentially, where you've got a private contract issue, you can't merely, as a city, create an ordinance, publish it, and consider it to have been incorporated into your private agreement with entities or citizens or persons outside of your.
The city argues, as you know, that with respect to Smith, that there's no evidence of any oral contract between Smith and the city of Perrysburg. What's your response?
Your Honor, my response to that is I believe there is a transcript from a preliminary injunction hearing, and there isn't definitely as much as I would like to have in the record, and I didn't represent the Smiths or the Bakeys at the trial court level. But I think that there is some indication that certainly that Mr. Smith received water from the city of Perrysburg and paid his water bill. I agree that it's not a very detailed or extensive
That's the basis, excuse me, of your oral contract agreement, is it not? That he received water and he paid his water bill, so there's this, I guess, an implied agreement that if you send me water, I'll pay you for it.
That is.
But the Perrysburg doesn't have any obligation to provide water to anybody, does it? Outside its own boundaries?
It doesn't have an obligation, but once it agrees to do that, which it implicitly has by supplying the water, it certainly has to abide by conditions. It can't just one day show up and turn the water off.
Are you familiar with our decision in Grandview Heights versus Columbus?
Yes, I am.
Doesn't that indicate that one day they could show up and just turn the water off? Or does it? What is your view of it, I should ask?
My view is that it, and I think that we tried to draw the difference between it can make any condition it wants to at the extension, essentially where you go to sign up for the water, but once you've essentially agreed to extend that water, the continuation is something different. You could potentially change conditions if reasonable notice was given, but in this case...
Well, if the city said, as of a certain date, we're no longer going to provide service, wouldn't that be some notice?
What reasonable notice in this case, Your Honor, is, I think, is still to be determined. And if that was your position and your decision was that eventually the city could provide or could change the conditions, if they gave reasonable notice, I think we would have to go back to the trial court to determine what reasonable notice is after you've had water service for 22 years, given that getting water service to your house isn't as easily done as getting a new apartment. Certainly, you know, if there is an alternative, that you don't need to annex, but you can't have our water service. Reasonable notice of a period sufficient to get additional water service into your house should be given. The 10-day notice or the 30-day notice is, you know, we would argue certainly not reasonable.
Well, counsel, the whole issue of modification of this arrangement, based on what you're saying, how do you respond to the observation that if you're not allowed to change it, rate increases would never take place, or any other changes absent the annexation issue?
Sure. I think that upon applying for or getting water, the rate increase is a little different in the sense that when you get water, as part of an unwritten agreement, you understand that there will be rate changes and that you will pay the going rate similar to all the other extraterritorial customers that are in your situation. Again, it's hard to necessarily compare the rate change, which is understood at the very beginning that you're going to have fluctuations in price of water, with the requirement later down the line that you're going to be required to no longer be a township resident, but instead become a citizen of Perrysburg, of the city of Perrysburg.
Well, are you arguing that on one level of sophistication, a consumer should be able to anticipate rate increases just because everything goes up? And just like any other utility, your gas, your electric, et cetera. So in the world of experiences, yeah, there's no contract here, but I kind of understand that I'm always going to have rate increases, and I'm okay with that. And then because the same level of sophistication is not applicable to ordinances that are created to govern the water district, the consumer is absolved of the effects of notices that are supplied pursuant to statute?
I don't know that I'm necessarily saying they're completely absolved, but there are different processes. I would agree with your first premise that the consumer understands that essentially everything's going to go up. And that's implicit in the water agreement when you sign up for it. As to the second part, to the extent that you're saying the consumer's not forced to expect a 30-day notice that they're going to get their water turned off, then they are absolved somewhat in the at least to the point where what is reasonable notice to terminate someone's water service, which is essential, needs to be determined. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well, isn't the whole focus here is notice that they were going to have to sign an annexation or participate in annexation without a written contract to that effect?
Correct.
And the notice of the fact that you're required, because the water district has changed its rules, so to speak, is that if you're a non or an extraterritorial consumer, you know, you're going to have to acquiesce to the annexation in order to continue to receive. Now, are you arguing that the notice of the change of circumstances was ineffective, or the notice that unless you comply with the annexation petition, we're going to shut your water off? What didn't they have notice of?
They had noticed that unless you come in, Mr. Smith, I think the notice was the same, but Mr. Smith and the Bakeys got notice that said, unless you come down and sign or consent to annexation, your water will be terminated in, I believe initially it was 30 days. It was subsequently backed up to another 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our position that, at least in Mr. Smith's case, having never agreed to that in his original contract in 78, that that's not permissible. And even if, I mean, even were this court to find it was permissible, what is reasonable then would still need to be sent back to the trial court to be determined.
What is reasonable as far as a shutoff date?
Correct.
Okay.
And what is reasonable as far as notice of change of the contract terms, well, period?
But the Bakey signed a contract agreeing that they would support annexation, did they not? Aren't these two parties in very different positions? One signed a contract that they now don't want to comply with, and the other did not sign a contract, had allegedly an oral contract because they paid their water bill. But the Bakeys who signed the contract, they're not, there's no surprise to them, is there?
Your Honor.
Am I missing something?
Sure
you can answer the question.
Okay. They are in very different positions. And Mr. Smith is certainly in a better, stronger position as far as his argument that continuation of water should occur. There is, in our brief, first argument proposition of law that there's a difference between the extension of water service and the continuation of water service. And I think that's the argument that more accurately applies to the Bakeys. The other arguments apply across the board to Mr. Smith. So they are in different positions.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Zimmerman.
You.
Ms. Piza.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Lisa Piza here on behalf of the City of Perrysburg. And I guess the appropriate place to begin is that contrary to the appellant's position, there is no legal authority that limits the city's discretion to set terms for water sales to non-inhabitants based on whether it's the initiation of service or the continuation of service. The appropriate inquiry is whether any contract exists that obligates the city to provide water to a particular extraterritorial user. In this instance, the Bakeys do have a contract. They're unquestionably in breach of it, and the city should be entitled to exercise its right under the contract, which is specified a termination of service. Mr. Smith has proffered absolutely no evidence of the existence of an oral contract. His claim seems to be based on a false premise that the city can only serve pursuant to some contract, and that is plainly not the case.
Counsel, I take it, since it hasn't been raised, that there are no agreements with the ultimate providers of water. Perrysburg doesn't provide the water, right? They get it from someone else.
Perrysburg purchases water from the city of Toledo, but Perrysburg directly sells it to the Bakeys and Smith.
But there are large public interests always at work when you're dealing with these kinds of issues, whether it's annexation or whether it's water or whether it's sewer. And it would not be uncommon, certainly in those areas where the state has funded the source of the water, to have certain agreements regarding the extension of water out into unincorporated areas. There's nothing of that nature involved here.
No, there's not, Your Honor. In fact,
what I'm getting at is, for example, you're getting it from Toledo here, and Toledo could have said, we think it's in the best interests of the community at large to have as few water wells as possible and as much municipal water, or they just want to move water and sell it, and so they could have required you to provide water to unincorporated areas with no strings attached. They did nothing of the kind, I take it, in this case.
That's right, Your Honor, and in fact, there were documents produced in discovery to show that there had been discussion within the city of Toledo about requiring Perrysburg to forego the annexation requirement, and that never made it into even the discussion with Perrysburg, but certainly not into the contract. In this case, particularly involving Mr. Smith, is quite similar to the Indian Hill case, in which a contract expired, and after the expiration, the city changed its policy to require annexation as a condition of future service. And in this case, Mr. Smith initially received service from the city under a contract with Wood County and the city. There was no direct contract with him at the initiation of his service. But even had there been, in 1970, 5 years before he began receiving city water service, the city adopted Rule 1, which said all of our rules are a part of any contract, and if you take water from us, all our rules are a condition of your receiving service. And the contract that the county had with Perrysburg said whatever rules the city has now or may adopt in the future will apply. So even at the outset, there was a warning that conditions could change. And in this case,
and the county did nothing to protect the residents, the unincorporated area, from
that's right, Your Honor.
Annexation.
Not in its initial contract in 73 to 80, and not in its subsequent contract, 84 to 87.
Okay, and while I don't think it bears on the legal side of this, will this annexation change school districts?
No, it will not.
So everybody's going to be just, it's principally going to be a matter of who plows the streets
and whether they have to pay the city income tax.
Income tax is the principal,
yes,
rub,
Your Honor.
I assume.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And there are other services that they will receive from the city, fire service, trash service, and so on. The Indian Hill Court only imposed two standards on a city that wants to change the rules under which it will sell extraterritorially, and that was that the council adopt the rules and that the rules not violate the Constitution. And having acknowledged in their own syllabus that annexation is an appropriate condition, the constitutionality should be beyond question. And that court even acknowledged in its own terms that it might impose, quote, great hardship, but still acknowledged that it was within the city's rights. And the rules that are in question here were enacted by the city pursuant to its ordinances. I wanted to address one point that was raised in questions and responses from Mr. Zimmerman, the suggestion that this should go back to the Common Pleas Court to decide what is a reasonable notice. The Common Pleas Court had before it the rules of the city, which specifically say 60 days notice. It granted summary judgment. Mr. Smith and Mr. Bakey's also requested summary judgment, therefore suggesting that in their view it was a matter of law. So there should be no questions to go back to the Common Pleas Court. The court at the Common Pleas level and the appellate level have said that the statutes do provide adequate, or the ordinances provide adequate notice by requiring a 60-day notice, which Mr. Smith and the Bakeys did receive.
Annexation is not an automatic here, is it?
It's a petition process.
Yeah, I understand. But there are all of the other barriers to annexation still would be in play. The trustees can object. The commissioners can look at it and say the territory is too large, you can't provide the services, all the other things that they get to evaluate.
The commissioners will certainly evaluate. In this instance, the township trustees have an agreement already existing with the city of Perrysburg that they will not object to
annexation. So you've handcuffed everybody in sight then, huh?
Everyone benefits from some part of the agreements. Essentially, these appellants are non-inhabitants, non-residents of the city who want the city's amenities, including municipal water service, and they're asking the court to let them receive the municipal amenities without requiring them to become part of the municipality. And we would therefore ask the court to affirm the appellate judgment that requires them to follow the ordinances and rules of the city. Are there any further questions?
Thank you, Ms. Pisa.
Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman, you've saved a little less than a minute of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess I would just follow up with your question as to whether or not the other processes of the protection from annexation do exist. And as Ms. Pisa referenced, the trustees have already agreed to the annexation, and essentially Willow Bend is a nice cherry to be picked because it's a fairly affluent neighborhood.
Is it contiguous to the rest of Perrysburg, or is this leapfrogging down the road?
It is contiguous in some manner. There, based on prior annexation, there are some islands. It's a big subdivision, and it's not directly.
The commissioners can still say no if they don't meet the other tests, whether the trustees object or not.
They certainly could, but I guess one of our points, may I just conclude?
Sure.
One of our points is simply that the choice of this Willow Bend residences is arbitrary, and I think that the mayor himself references that in the record, that he just simply picked it out. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.